Welcome to Hour 1 of the Arizona Republic for September 11th. I'm your volunteer reader, Jack Palmer. In this hour, we'll be reading headlines, Valley and State, and USA Today headlines. Our first article is entitled, Conservative Leader Dies, written by Ray Stern and Taylor Seeley. Charlie Kirk, the founder of Turning Point USA, and an important ally to President Donald Trump, is dead after being shot on September 10th at an outdoor event at Utah Valley University in Orem, Utah. Trump confirmed Kirk's death on social media, saying, "No one understood or had the heart of the youth in the United States of America better than Charlie." Trump ordered flags to fly at half-staff until the evening of September 14th. The shot was fired at 12:10 p.m. as Kirk was speaking at an event, according to Utah Valley University police. Graphic videos that circulated online showed Kirk, 31 years old, being hit in the neck, his body slumping over as blood flowed heavily. The horrific scene in the videos aligned with eyewitness accounts of the shooting. Only one shot was heard. Utah Governor Spencer Cox, during a news conference at 4:30 p.m. local time, called Kirk's death a political assassination and said a person of interest was in custody. He told investigators had no reason to believe that more than one person was involved. About a half hour after Cox made the statements, FBI Director Kash Patel posted on XCOM that the person had been released after an interrogation by law enforcement. "Our investigation continues, and we will continue to release information in interest of transparency," Patel said. Bo Mason, commissioner of the Utah Department of Public Safety, said at a news conference that a surveillance camera may have captured an image of the suspect. "The only information we have on the suspect, the possible shooter, is taken from closed-circuit TV here on campus. We do have that. We're analyzing it. But it is security camera footage, so you can kind of guess what the quality of that is," he said, adding the suspect wore all dark clothing. "We don't have a much better description than that," he said. "The shot was fired from somewhere on campus," Mason said, "potentially from a roof, a longer distance shot from a roof." The university's chief of police, Jeff Long, said about 3,000 people had been in attendance at the event, including six officers. "You try to get your bases covered," he said. "Unfortunately, today we didn't." The campus closed soon after the shooting, and all classes were canceled. University police asked students to leave the campus immediately. All roads to the university were closed, and police were going building to building, escorting people off campus. Kirk, who gained nationwide prominence after his speech at the 2016 Republican convention, was the CEO of the organization he founded in 2012. Turning Point USA was geared to young conservatives and became a significant player in elections across the country. The organization was a powerful force in helping Trump get elected as president last year. It's also been a dynamic force in Arizona, where it chose to locate its headquarters, energizing the Republican base. The group has steered elections and pushed conservative politics into city councils and school boards. Kirk was a divisive figure whose rhetoric often crossed boundaries. His current tour at colleges in Utah was met with resistance. "Stop Charlie Kirk from spreading hate on Utah campuses," said the headline of one of at least two online petitions signed by hundreds of people to try to prevent Kirk from speaking at Utah Valley University. Reactions to the shooting of one of the country's most high-profile conservatives exploded across social media. "Pray for Kirk" and "enough is enough" became top trending phrases. Arizona's top Democrats issued public statements condemning the shooting. "This tragedy is not about who Charlie Kirk supported politically. It is about the devastating loss of a father, a neighbor, and an Arizonan who called this state home and whose life was cut short by senseless violence," said Governor Katie Hobbs in a statement. "We must stand together in rejecting violence, lowering the temperature of our politics, and recommitting ourselves to the values of civility, respect, and community that American democracy requires." Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays and Secretary of State Adrian Fontes posted similar reactions. A handful of people stopped by Turning Point's headquarters in Phoenix during the afternoon, praying for Kirk and dropping off flowers. Police officers were also on the scene, and caution tape surrounded the building. Mike Hood, a man who works on some of the buildings in the area, heard the news online. He drove over and delivered white roses. He said he'd been following Kirk for roughly 5 years and described this moment as coming to a head. He connected it to vitriolic rhetoric and people being too willing to call each other Nazis and vilify each other. Pawnee Carter said Kirk made conservatives like herself feel confident to speak about their faith and views on right and wrong. "We live in America. We have the First Amendment right to free speech," Carter said. "He was killed because of that First Amendment right, but he taught the rest of us that it's okay to be strong." Carter said she told her daughter, "You know, they hated Jesus too. He didn't start out to be a martyr, but he became one." Carter said she was sickened that someone would kill a young man with children. She said the conservative movement would keep moving forward. "You put one foot in front of the other, you pray, you bring that prayer to the streets," Carter said. "You march forward with American flags in hands, you put your gun on your side, and you carry it proudly and out loud, because we are not ashamed of who we are." She said she was going to buy another gun quickly, and she suspected other conservatives would too. She said she hoped Trump would send the National Guard to other cities in response to Kirk's death. Damon Zomer said his wife was nervous for him to stop by Turning Point headquarters because it might be a target, but he felt compelled to come and pray. He was coming to pray for Kirk's healing, but pivoted to pray for his wife and children after he heard of Kirk's death. Zomer called it an alternating point in history and a day I won't forget. Zomer said it was scary to be a conservative in America right now, a place where it felt like if you didn't conform and sign on to the political left's beliefs, you could be killed. He said he believed Kirk knew death was a risk. Zomer said he did not believe this would stop conservatives. Rather, it would wake them up and the baton would be passed, he said. Kirk had been a rising star within the Republican Party over the last 10 years, growing his own online profile and expanding Turning Point USA into a power broker within the GOP. His 2016 Republican convention speech helped introduce him to a national audience. Then, 22 years old, Kirk energized the Cleveland crowd with an applause line that the GOP was the party of youth and diversity. The next article is entitled, Republicans and Democrats Condemn Horrific Act, written by Ronald Hansen, Stephanie Murray, Laura Gersony, and Stacey Barchenger. The slaying of conservative activist Charlie Kirk drew immediate bipartisan condemnation across the political spectrum and renewed pleas in some cases for an end to politically inspired violence. An avalanche of the all-too-familiar calls for thoughts and prayers from scores of members of Congress and within Arizona politics followed within minutes of the midday September 10th shooting at Utah Valley University. President Donald Trump confirmed Kirk's death on social media a few hours after the shooting. The great, the even legendary Charlie Kirk is dead. No one understood or had the heart of the youth in the United States of America better than Charlie. He was loved and admired by all, especially me, and now he is no longer with us. Melania's and my sympathies go out to his beautiful wife, Erica, and family. Charlie, we love you. Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs, a Democrat, called on the public to reject violence and embrace civility. This horrific act is a reminder that political violence has no place in our society. Regardless of our beliefs or affiliations, resorting to violence to settle differences is never acceptable, she said. Let's not retreat into silence or hatred, but rise above violence by recommitting ourselves to the democratic principles of civil engagement and mutual respect. Vice President J.D. Vance said Kirk was a genuinely good guy and a young father. Vance and Kirk were longtime allies. Dear God, protect Charlie in his darkest hour, Vance wrote before Kirk succumbed to his injury. He shared a photo of himself, Kirk, and Donald Trump Jr. U.S. Senator Mark Kelly, Democrat of Arizona, whose wife, former Representative Gabrielle Giffords, Democrat of Arizona, was shot in the head in 2011 near Tucson, called the shooting shocking and horrible. It's an example of political violence that has no place in our country. Gabby and I are thinking of him and his family, Kelly said in the period before Kirk died. Senator Ruben Gallego, Democrat of Arizona, reminded people that Kirk was more than a political figure. Beyond politics, Charlie Kirk was someone's father, husband, and son. Remember that first, before engaging in whataboutism. His family will never be the same. Political violence has to stop by all sides, he said. While the assassin's identity remained unknown, some conservatives seized on the shooting as reason to clamp down on the political left. Trump ally Laura Loomer offered a reaction that blamed the political left. The Democrats cannot keep getting away with declaring open season on conservatives, she wrote in a social media post. It's time for the Trump administration to shut down, defund, and prosecute every single leftist organization. If Charlie Kirk dies from his injuries, his life cannot be in vain, Loomer wrote online. We must shut these lunatic leftists down once and for all. The left is a national security threat. Billionaire Elon Musk, who briefly served in the Trump administration, also blamed the political left for Kirk's shooting before officials shared any information about the suspect's identity. The left is the party of murder, Musk wrote on X, the social media platform he owns. Representative Pat Harrigan, Republican of North Carolina, similarly blamed the left, even as the motive for the shooting remained unclear. The left couldn't stand 15 feet in front of Charlie and argue with his logic, so they shot him from 200 yards away instead. Absolutely disgusting, he wrote in a social media post. U.S. Representative Andy Biggs, Republican of Arizona, a close ally of Kirk and his Turning Point organizations, said Kirk left a mark on the nation. We have tragically lost a tremendous leader and a friend, but his most important role was as a loving husband, father, and devout Christian who shared his faith unapologetically, Biggs said. Charlie Kirk was an inspiration to an entire generation and will be remembered as someone who changed the course of our country. Biggs also shared a message from Sean Davis, the CEO of the conservative organization The Federalist, that blamed Democrats for the slaying. Democrats will murder you in cold blood and then object when someone rises to pray for your family. Former Senator Jeff Flake, Republican of Arizona, struck a different tone. He gave a speech at Utah Valley University on September 9th, one day before Kirk was shot there. In addition to that coincidence, Flake is a friend of Giffords and was on the baseball field in June 2017 when a gunman shot four people, including House Majority Leader Steve Scalise, Republican of Louisiana, in a rage against Republicans. In an interview with CNN, Flake urged Americans to rise above violence and called for political leadership setting the example. We've got to do better. We've got to stop treating each other, those we may be opposed to with or not agree with politically. We can't treat them as the enemy, he said. For those in the public eye and those holding public office, I'm not placing any blame on this specific issue, but we need to stop referring to those on the other side of us as evil. Those of us in positions need to be a better example, frankly. Arizona State Senate President Warren Peterson, Republican of Gilbert, called for prayers for Kirk's family and a rejection of violence. This attack serves as a sobering reminder of the dangerous consequences that arise when political disagreements cross the line into violence, he said in a statement. Regardless of where you stand on the political spectrum, there is never any justification for silencing someone with a bullet. Some of the most prominent Democrats in Washington offered unambiguous condemnations of the shooting. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat of New York, said the scourge of gun violence and political violence must end. The shooting of Charlie Kirk is the latest incident of this chaos, and it must stop. We cannot go down this road. Representative Nancy Pelosi, Democrat of California, the former House Speaker, whose husband was bludgeoned in his home by a man who hoped to attack her, said the shooting was reprehensible. Political violence has absolutely no place in our nation. All Americans should pray for Charlie Kirk's recovery and hold the entire Utah Valley University community in our hearts as they endure the trauma of this gun violence, Pelosi said. There is no place for political violence. Pray for Kirk and for our country. We must stand together to ensure this never happens again, said U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy, Republican of Louisiana. Representative David Schweikert, Republican of Arizona, said he was devastated to hear the news about Charlie Kirk. I want to extend my heartfelt prayers and support to Charlie and his family. Representative Greg Stanton, Democrat of Arizona, called the incident horrifying. I'm praying hard for him and keeping his family in my thoughts. Political violence has absolutely no place in our country. Representative Yasemin Ansari, Democrat of Arizona, tied Kirk's death to a school shooting in Colorado the same day to condemn gun violence. Horrific gun tragedies, one after another. Charlie Kirk lost his life. Not even an hour later, a school in Colorado came under fire. Communities shattered. Lives changed forever, she said. This is not normal, and this is not acceptable. We cannot keep living like this. Giffords, who founded an anti-gun violence organization that bears her name, weighed in as well. Democratic societies will always have political disagreements, but we must never allow America to become a country that confronts those disagreements with violence, Giffords said in a statement. The next article is entitled, Kirk's Group is a Political Powerhouse, written by Laura Gersoni and Stephanie Murray. Conservative media personality Charlie Kirk was shot at an outdoor event in Utah on September 10th. Kirk, 31 years old, was the founder of the Arizona-based conservative group Turning Point USA and a top ally of President Donald Trump. At the time he was shot, he was hosting an event at Utah Valley University titled Prove Me Wrong, where he challenged students who disagreed with him to a debate. Video posted on social media showed thousands of students gathered around Kirk, who was seated on a stool under a tent and speaking into a microphone. The sound of a gunshot could be heard, and a bullet could be seen entering the side of Kirk's neck. Blood gushed from the wound. Trump announced Kirk's death on Truth Social a few hours later. Kirk had been a rising star within the Republican Party over the past 10 years, growing his own online profile and expanding Turning Point USA into a power broker within the GOP. A speech he delivered at the 2016 Republican Convention helped introduce him to a national audience. Then 22 years old, Kirk energized the Cleveland crowd with an applause line that the GOP was the party of youth and diversity. He volunteered a to-the-point slogan irreverent for its name, Big Government Sucks. In the two presidential election cycles since then, Kirk's organization has become a political heavyweight in Arizona and nationwide. Turning Point's campaign wing regularly hosted Trump's presidential campaign events in Arizona, a swing state, during the 2024 election cycle. The group is controversial even among Republicans. Its leaders have sought to oust those they disagree with. During the 2024 election cycle, Kirk publicly criticized the leadership of former Republican National Committee Chair Rona McDaniel and called on his donors to stop giving to the National Party. McDaniel stepped down months later. Kirk himself has pursued provocative political positions, such as a social media campaign to discredit the civil rights activist Martin Luther King Jr. He has encouraged traditional gender roles, praising the values of marriage and motherhood to young women. Turning Point now boasts allies at the very top of the GOP's chain of command. Charlie Kirk and Turning Point have been a major reason why the conservative movement is finally growing a spine, Donald Trump Jr. said in a written comment to the Arizona Republic in 2024. Turning Point's influence has grown because they pick the right fights, work their butts off, and they don't apologize for it. That inspires people. Kirk was born in Illinois and raised in the Chicago suburbs. He got involved in politics as a high school student and later dropped out of Harper College to pursue political activism. Kirk was 18 years old when he co-founded Turning Point USA with conservative activist Bill Montgomery in 2012. The political group is headquartered in Phoenix. Kirk married Arizona native Erica Frantsev in 2021. They have two young children, a son and a daughter. The next article is entitled, People Demand Scottsdale School Board Member Resign, written by Alexandra Hartle. People turned out at the Scottsdale Unified School District Board meeting on September 9th to demand the resignation of a board member who is also a state legislator, after she was overheard referring to a district employee as morbidly obese during an August board meeting. Scottsdale Unified Governing Board member Kareen Warner had attended an August 5th meeting virtually and was heard making the comment in a hot mic moment. Warner is also an Arizona State Senator for Legislative District 4, representing parts of Scottsdale, North Phoenix, and Paradise Valley. She serves as chair of the Senate's Health and Human Services Committee, vice chair of the Education Committee, and is a member of the Appropriations Committee. After Warner's comments about the Scottsdale Unified employee, a petition was circulated calling for her resignation, gathering over 1,500 signatures, said Shay Najafi, who has two children in the district. Several people stood outside the September 9th Scottsdale Unified Board meeting holding signs calling for Warner's resignation and a public apology. Warner was not present at the event, nor did she attend virtually. During the public comment portion of the meeting, Najafi and several other speakers expressed disappointment that Warner was not present. Sarah Kuchenbacher, who lives in the district and has two children enrolled in Scottsdale Unified, said she attended the meeting to show her children how to stand up to bullies. She is someone who uses her power to belittle people who don't look like her and thinks she can get away with it, Kuchenbacher said. And I'm here to show her that I'm not all right with that, and I don't want her representing my children. Kuchenbacher also said she disagreed with Warner's support for book banning and Prager University, a group that produces videos for classrooms that has been embraced by some political conservatives. Prager University's materials have been criticized as slanted and inaccurate. Before Warner was on the board or elected to the legislature, she spoke out about books tied to the district's English language arts curriculum for high schoolers, calling supplemental material for ninth graders some pretty significant, vile, and inappropriate stuff, according to reporting in 2021 by the Scottsdale Independent. In 2024, she appeared at a news conference alongside Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Horn in support of Prager University. Erin Nicoletti also said she was present at the September 9th board meeting because of the comment Warner made, as well as other issues such as book restrictions. Don't take away my freedom to let my children learn whatever, Nicoletti said. If you don't want your children to read it, then don't let them read it, but don't ban it from all the children. Governing Board Vice President Mike Sharkey was the only board member physically present at the meeting, with board members Matthew Patinsky and Amy Carney attending virtually. At the end of the public comments, Sharkey said that the district's legal counsel informed him that board members cannot be censured. Sharkey also said Werner's comments did not reflect the governing board's ethics policy, which states that board members shall safeguard public confidence and the integrity of the district by being honest, fair, caring, and respectful. Werner's three-year term ends in 2026. She did not immediately respond to an inquiry from the Arizona Republic on September 10th. You're listening to Hour 1 of today's Arizona Republic on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Jack Palmer, and we'll continue with an article titled "Wadsack Asks to Dismiss Lawsuit," written by Sarah Lapidus. Former State Senator Justine Wadsack wants to dismiss her federal lawsuit against Tucson and several of the city's police officers as she faces potential sanctions for missing an in-person hearing. Wadsack, a Republican, filed a voluntary dismissal without prejudice on Tuesday, citing negative impacts on her ability to care for her family. Wadsack sued the city and several police officers in an $8 million lawsuit after she was pulled over for speeding in March 2024. The dismissal request comes after Tucson asked the court to hold Wadsack in contempt when she missed a hearing on August 26th, while instead attending a Turning Point USA event in Phoenix. Wadsack said in court documents filed Tuesday she was made aware of the hearing and the requirements that she attend in person. However, due to a family health crisis that is physically and mentally draining, she sometimes loses focus and mixes up dates and times. This caused her to miss the hearing. Tucson requested on September 2nd that the court impose sanctions against Wadsack for missing the hearing, including dismissal of the complaint. Tucson attorneys argued her conduct demonstrated a blatant and willful disregard for the authority of the court. Other sanctions could include fines, costs, orders establishing facts, prohibiting claims or defenses, striking pleadings, or other orders, Tucson's attorneys said. Questions remain about whether Tucson will continue to push for sanctions against Wadsack following her voluntary dismissal. "We will evaluate the motion and determine our next steps. Beyond that, we're not in a position to comment at this time relating to ongoing litigation," said Tucson City Attorney Mike Rankin in an email to the Arizona Republic. Wadsack was scheduled to appear in court on August 26th for a hearing to address the request of her attorney, Dennis Willinchick, to withdraw without her consent. But instead of attending the hearing, she posted on X that she was sitting front and center at a Turning Point Action event featuring Charlie Kirk. The in-person hearing was initially scheduled for July 29th to address Willinchick's withdrawal. The day before that court date, Willinchick filed a request from Wadsack to reschedule because of a family emergency. U.S. District Judge Jennifer Zips ordered a new hearing to take place on August 19th. Wadsack requested that the hearing be rescheduled to take place after August 22nd because she was out of town, prompting the court to reschedule for August 26th. Willinchick cited professional considerations as the reason for his withdrawing his representation. He said in an email to the Arizona Republic that he could not comment on the motion to withdraw, but said the action is not a reflection on the case's merits. Wacek said the move was based on a lack of funds to pay Willinchik, according to the Arizona Daily Star. To help cover the lawyer's costs, she tried to raise $75,000. Before she filed her voluntary dismissal, she raised $1,445 from a Give, Send, Go campaign page she set up earlier this year. Attorneys for Tucson and the police officers requested that Wacek be held in contempt of court and that sanctions be imposed. On August 27th, the court ordered Wacek to explain why she should not be held in contempt. Wacek's suit is centered around a traffic stop during which police accused her of driving 71 miles an hour on a road with a speed limit of 35 miles an hour. She claims in her lawsuit that the police hit her with a bogus charge, then leaked false statements about it to the media and ruined her political career. In body cam footage of the stop, first obtained by the Tucson Sentinel, Wacek said she was racing to get home because she had only 4 miles left on her Tesla battery. She informed the officer she was a state lawmaker, and he received guidance from his supervisors not to issue a ticket. The lawsuit states Assistant Chief Kevin Hall and Captains Lauren Petty and Frank Hand, who serve as Tucson police supervisors, met in the following weeks and acknowledged Wacek should not have been stopped. Petty later put into her report on the incident a summary of a phone conversation she had with Wacek in late June 2024, writing that Wacek demanded to speak with the chief of police and said that she was under political persecution. Petty intended to release her report to the media with a statement about persecution to damage Wacek, and that's just what happened, the lawsuit states. Willinchik said Wacek denies she told Petty she was being persecuted, and the phrase hurt Wacek in the public's eye. It was released purposefully as part of a scheme to ruin the plaintiff, her reputation, and her re-election bid, the lawsuit states. Wacek called the prosecution lawfare and entirely political in a social media post in September after the primary election, after losing the 2024 Republican primary to Senator Vince Leach. Her loss came after a major police organization withdrew its endorsement after she called the traffic ticket political persecution. A Tucson magistrate dismissed Wacek's speeding case on January 6th after Wacek completed a defensive driving course and proved she had car insurance to settle the case. The case was dismissed several months after Wacek pleaded not guilty to criminal speeding and failure to provide insurance. If you miss any of these articles, you can always listen on demand by going to our website, sunsounds.org, click on Broadcast Info and Audio, and then On Demand. We'll continue with an article titled, Access to Updated COVID Shots in Arizona is a Challenge, written by Stephanie Innes. Arizona's largest health system isn't administering updated COVID-19 shots, and it's not giving out prescriptions for them either. In an emailed statement to the Arizona Republic, Banner Health's chief clinical officer, Dr. Marjorie Bessel, said the nonprofit health system would be making recommendations about the updated shot the week of September 22nd that are science-backed and tailored to meet individual patient needs. The inability to get the updated shot from Banner Health right now is adding to existing barriers Arizonans are facing in getting the new COVID-19 vaccine, which some people refer to as the COVID booster. The new shots have been reformulated to target variants of the COVID-19 virus that are currently in circulation. Pharmacies in Arizona are not giving out the vaccines to anyone without a prescription, even to people who fit within the new U.S. Food and Drug Administration guidelines of being over 65 or having an underlying health condition. In her statement, Bessel said that Banner Health is awaiting the outcome from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, which is scheduled to meet September 18th and 19th. Insurers often base coverage decisions on what the advisory committee decides. The panel did not vote on the COVID-19 vaccines as scheduled in June. Banner Health follows evidence-based vaccine guidance from health agencies to protect our patients and communities, the statement says. Our commitment remains focused on delivering safe, effective, and personalized care that protects the health and well-being of those we serve. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration recently rolled back its approval for who can get the vaccine to people over the age of 65 and people under the age of 65 with at least one underlying health condition, a large category of conditions that include being sedentary, overweight, having depression, and being pregnant. The updated FDA parameters are a major departure from prior years when the COVID-19 vaccine was approved for all Americans ages 6 months and older. The new parameters say nothing about healthcare workers or about people who live with household members who are vulnerable to a bad outcome from COVID-19. Other states have intervened to ensure access to the updated shots, and Massachusetts has taken the extra step of ordering insurance companies to pay for vaccines that are backed by its state health department, regardless of what the FDA, CDC, or ACIP say. In Arizona, neither the governor's office nor the Arizona Department of Health Services has responded to questions about the vaccine status in the state. Arizona retiree William Andre Coppolis said he was shocked out of my mind to get a message from Banner Health on September 8th that said his Banner Health primary care physician could not write him a prescription to get the new COVID-19 vaccine. Andre Coppolis had reached out to his family doctor after trying to get the shot at a pharmacy. My wife has medical concerns, and I want to protect her by getting the shot, said Andre Coppolis, a 77-year-old retired school administrator who moved to Arizona from Wisconsin in 2018. My friends in other states are getting it. It's ridiculous. During his three-hour September 4th hearing before the Senate Finance Committee, U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said anyone who wants the new COVID-19 vaccine can get it. However, that is not true for many Arizonans like Andre Coppolis and his wife, who are still trying to find out how to get one. Andre Coppolis thinks the governor's office or the Arizona Department of Health Services need to intervene to ensure broad access to the shots, as other states have done. The message Banner Health is sending to patients says, Banner Health and its providers are not currently prescribing the COVID-19 vaccine until further notice, as we are awaiting the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices to provide recommendations to our providers, the message says. Banner will reevaluate promptly in the next few weeks and will keep our patients posted regarding the prescriptions for the vaccine. One solution to getting the updated vaccine is that while CVS pharmacies are not offering the shots in Arizona without a prescription, CVS Minute Clinics are scheduling COVID-19 shots for people who either have an underlying health condition or are over the age of 65. Officials at Scottsdale-based Honor Health says their clinicians are writing prescriptions for patients to get the vaccine, but the health system's clinicians, as of September 9th, were not administering the new COVID shots. Another solution is to wait a week or two. Valleywise Health says it plans to both administer the vaccines and write prescriptions for patients who want to get them in pharmacies, but that as of September 9th, it did not have the vaccines in stock. The next article is entitled, Judge Blocks Fed Governor's Removal, written by Bart Jansen. Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook's lawyer said a judge's decision to temporarily block President Donald Trump from removing her from the Federal Reserve Board, an unprecedented move, recognized the independence of the central bank. Allowing the president to unlawfully remove Governor Cook on unsubstantiated and vague allegations would endanger the stability of our financial system and undermine the rule of law, lawyer Abby Lowell said in a statement. U.S. District Judge Gia Cobb didn't resolve September 9th whether Trump could fire Cook for alleged mortgage fraud before taking office. Cook denies wrongdoing and has not been charged with a crime. The Justice Department is investigating. But Cobb said Cook would be harmed significantly if she were removed from office while the case is argued. Cobb noted that Congress said a president could only remove a Fed governor for cause, which means a good reason. For cause thus does not contemplate removing an individual purely for conduct that occurred before they began in office, Cobb wrote. Trump didn't respond to a reporter's question September 9th about the case. The Supreme Court is expected to ultimately decide whether a president can remove a Fed board member. No president has ever tried to fire one. The High Court has refused to block Trump from firing the heads of other so-called independent boards, but the justices seem to draw a line at the 7-member Fed board, which the court says was uniquely structured with Congress intending that monetary policy was independent of the president. Paul Schiff Berman, a law professor at George Washington University, who is an expert on the Constitution and administrative law, said the case could determine how much protection the for cause requirement provides. The question becomes, will the Supreme Court allow Trump to do this end run around the very for-cause removal protections that the court said was essential for central banking, Berman said. We'll see. But this is a major escalation, and it has dire consequences for our entire central banking system, and therefore our entire economy. The Fed sets interest rates that help determine how fast or slow the economy grows. Trump has berated Fed Chair Jerome Powell to lower interest rates to spur growth. But Congress set up the 7-member Fed board to make economic decisions independent of political pressure. The board meets next on September 16th and 17th and is expected to cut interest rates to some degree. The Consumer Price Index increased 0.2% in July for a 2.7% rate over the previous year, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The unemployment rate remained nearly unchanged at 4.3% in August, the Bureau said. In addition, the Producer Price Index dipped 0.1%, the Bureau announced September 10th. Trump greeted the lack of inflation by urging the Fed again on social media for an interest rate cut. The Senate Banking Committee voted along party lines September 10th to recommend confirmation of Steven Miron, a top White House economic advisor, to the Fed. Lawmakers said it wasn't clear whether he could be confirmed before the September 16th Fed meeting. Trump had said at a cabinet meeting August 26th that he expected to soon have a majority on the Fed board to lower interest rates and boost housing. "We'll have a majority very shortly," Trump said. The next article is entitled, "Qatar Tries to Balance Diplomatic and Business Ambitions," written by Andrew Mills, Rachna Uppel, and Youssef Saba. Israel's strikes targeting Hamas in Doha, hot on the heels of an Iranian hit on the U.S. base in the Gulf nation in June, could shake Qatar's image as a stable business hub as it seeks to balance commercial goals with global diplomatic ambitions. Qatar's determination to carve out a diplomatic role as a mediator in the Gaza war has already pulled it into the wider Middle East conflict. In June, Iran hit the Al-Udeid military base in retaliation for U.S. strikes on Iranian nuclear sites, with most of the missiles intercepted in the skies above Doha. On September 9th, Israeli strikes on Palestinian militant group Hamas's political leadership put Qatar in the firing line again. Qatar is in a unique position of having suffered both Iranian and Israeli attacks within a few months, said Justin Alexander, director at Kalji Economics and Gulf Analyst at Global Source Partners. "There was little discernible impact from the Iranian strikes, but if this begins to look like a pattern, then risk perceptions may shift." A Doha-based executive at a large Western firm, who declined to be named, told Reuters his company was still evaluating the situation, but business had resumed as normal a day after the strikes, as if nothing had happened. Another finance professor in Qatar said scaling back business would be a reward for Israel for what he saw as a violation of international law. "Hopefully, this will renew the vigor to do business in Qatar," he said. Tehran's attack in June was telegraphed in advance, giving ample time for Qatari defenses to prepare. No one was harmed. Israel's attack, however, caught Doha by surprise and killed at least 7 people, including a member of Qatar's internal security forces, 5 Hamas members, and another person. The majority of nearly 3 million people who live in the Gulf state are expatriates drawn from all corners of the world, mostly by business opportunities in one of the world's wealthiest countries. the host of the 2022 Soccer World Cup, Qatar boasts gleaming high-rises, a new 10-lane expressway, and a futuristic metro. But it is among the most hydrocarbon-reliant of the Gulf states, lagging neighbors the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia in diversifying its economy, something its government seeks to change by refocusing economic priorities. Doha has long had key business interests in the United States, its ally and longtime security guarantor. State-owned Qatar Energy is building an ambitious expansion to its LNG output in the massive North Field, which it shares with Iran. Major U.S. energy companies ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips are key partners in the expansion project, which will almost double Qatar's LNG output. Golden Pass, which Qatar Energy owns with ExxonMobil, is building a major LNG export facility in Sabine Pass, Texas, and plans to start exporting LNG later this year. President Donald Trump, who visited Doha in May and stayed in a hotel not far from the scene of the September 9th strike, sought to reassure Qataris after the attack, saying nothing like this would happen on their soil again. During his May visit, Trump had reassured Doha that the United States would protect it if it ever came under attack. The state's Qatar Investment Authority pledged to invest $500 billion in the United States over the next decade during Trump's Gulf tour, and Trump said defense purchases signed during the trip amounted to $42 billion. Qatar Airways also signed an order for 160 Boeing jetliners with GE Aerospace engines worth $96 billion, Boeing's biggest deal for wide-body airplanes. Those economic ties will be closely watched, and further instability could throw new investment into doubt, analysts say. If there were further attacks, then it would force Qatari U.S. businesses to reevaluate the risk and put in place appropriate mitigation measures, said Neil Killiam, associate fellow at Chatham House. Qatar's vast oil and gas wealth helped it navigate a rift with its Gulf neighbors, which began in 2017 and endured for over 3 years. Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Oman, and Egypt choked off Qatar's economy with a boycott, accusing it of backing terrorists, a charge Doha denied. Qatar spared no penny fighting off the trade embargo at the time, including flying cows in on airplanes to start a local dairy industry. For now, no such drastic measures seem to be needed. Markets appeared to shrug off the strikes with no negative reactions in Qatari bonds or credit default swaps. And that's all the time we have for this hour of the Arizona Republic. I'm your broadcast volunteer, Jack Palmer. Stay tuned for the second hour of the Arizona Republic on Sun Sounds of Arizona.